Radioactive.
What it do, listeners?
It is I, Carlos Nieto.
And this I, Ardo Hersey.
Take us to your leader.
This here is Radioactive, and you're listening to our monthly podcast, made possible by your fellow Radioactivans.
Radioactive teaches high school youth radio, journalism, and interview skills, and is a part of KUOW.
Yeah, I did Radioactive my senior year, but there are some other high schoolers who are doing some pretty cool things out there.
Yeah, doing some cool things and overcoming difficult challenges life throws at them. For this month's podcast, you'll hear about everyday social problems that are hard to talk about affecting the lives of young people, brought to you by the new wave of Radioactivians. Skirt, skirt!
Let's hear a Zeb 2G story on how a strong and driven girl is able to share her love of filming and her passion for feminism.
What's the first word that comes to mind when I say feminism?
What?
The first word that comes to mind is Beyonce.
I'll be honest with you, I don't know what feminism is or what it means.
Power.
Empowerment and roller derbies.
Those are my friends Arag Papian, Betsy Madrid, Muhammad Abdi, Jesse McCall, and Layla McKinley. They couldn't wait to stop in the halls of Foster High School to answer some questions for me.
Do you hate men?
This is my classmate, Nandina Chenik. She's a feminist, a filmmaker, and an activist at Foster High School.
Are you a man-hater? That's the most common question that people ask, or that's the assumption that they make. If you're a feminist, it means you hate men, and that women are trying to take over the world, and blah, 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 blah. We're trying to, like, squander men, which isn't true at all.
Nandina's the type of person you find sitting in front of class with her brown hair in a ponytail and wearing an eccentric patterned scarf around her neck. She was born in Sarajevo in 1996, just after the Bosnian War. It was just last year when she began to learn more about the war.
During the war, Serbian forces would go to towns or villages or whatnot and round up all the men and kill most of them and take the women and place them in rape camps where they would repeatedly rape women. And it wasn't just women, it was young girls as well. And a lot of those women are still reeling from what's happened to them.
She learned more about the war in her civics class because she was writing a speech for civics. It was her civics teacher, Andrea Gamboa, who helped her see a new perspective on the world.
You meet a lot of people who change your viewpoint, and Miss Gamboa was one of them. She really helped me get there, and for me, Miss Gamboa is like a role model. She's somebody I look up to because she embodies what I want to be in the future. She's independent, she's confident, she's a strong woman.
After that, Nandina began to start reading books and watching movies on how women are treated around the world. During her junior year, she felt inspired enough to contribute to a cause she was passionate about. Nandina made a short film titled Wicked about domestic violence and how destructive it could be towards a person. This is a clip from Wicked featuring her history teacher, Tracy Garza, about how common domestic violence is.
1 in 3 women have been beaten or sexually abused in her lifetime. And in some parts of the world, a girl is more likely to be raped than learn to read. Violence can result in physical, mental, sexual, and reproductive health problems.
Nandina isn't the only one at Foster High School wanting to create change. One of Nandina's friends, Layla McKinley, who is a quirky, curly-haired junior, is also wanting to make a difference. Layla was in psychology class one day, and the teacher showed them a controversial video on feminism.
Basically, the video was just a bunch of, like, 7-year-olds, like, dressed up as princesses, saying bad words and how these bad words aren't as bad as words such as pay inequality and domestic violence. And once the video was done, this boy sitting next to me said, wow, I hate watching little kids cuss. And I just thought to myself, you just missed the whole point of the video.
This video urged Layla to start a feminist society. She's tired of the lack of understanding others have of the feminist movement.
There's a Black Student Union, there's a Bhutanese Student Club, there's all of these different clubs. Why not one for women, more specifically the feminists of Foster High School?
Nandina is extremely pumped to be a part of the club with Layla. She thinks there are many ways to strengthen the feminist community.
Instead of putting other girls down for something, if we empower other women and we support them in whatever endeavors they're making, that will make a community of women stronger and make the goal to achieve more rights more feasible.
So what does the word feminism mean to you?
It's about equality and achieving equality in all means of life.
Nandina Chenik hopes to fulfill a leadership role in the near future where she can help other women fill positions of power, locally and globally. For Radioactive, I'm Azeb Tuji.
Yo, Ardo.
What up?
What's something you stood up for in your life that wasn't popular at the time?
I guess I would have to say composting. In high school, I was like a huge environmentalist and a composting tree hugger and granola freak.
Word, that's pretty commendable of you. Have you heard of the expression, a needle in the haystack?
Yeah, who hasn't?
Well, Radioactive's Jalen Wheeler is that needle, and his world is like a haystack. Information about customized
care in the home, oh, nurse care management, my alarm just went off. Planning is online at soundoptions.com.
It's now 7 o'clock. I've done this a million times. Wake up, get ready, and sit in the car.
Mom, eat you out in the car. I know, I'm trying to eat this pancake.
At first, I hated getting up for school so early every day. Then it only made it worse that it took me an hour to get there. It would have been easier if it was 5 minutes away. The person who pushed me to do this was my mom.
I knew from the moment you were born that your path would be different from others.
She wanted it to be different from her own. She didn't get a chance to finish college because she had me.
In order for doors to open for you, I had to make drastic decisions.
I never thought of it like that. This struck me pretty hard. I wanted to talk to someone who knew what it was like for me. So I went to talk with Walter Jackson, the dean of students at my school, University Prep.
All right, so this story, the next story that I'm trying to do, is going to be about, the title's called Odd Man Out, and it's basically being the odd man out in a certain situation.
Mm-hmm. Where I grew up, there weren't a lot of black kids who felt like they could walk anywhere they want. They could go through any door they want. For me, growing up the way that I did, and being around them and walking through those doors and going through different places, I was brought up to feel like, no, I mean, I've got just as much right to be here as anybody else. Now, once I'm there, there's all kinds of stuff I'm thinking or questioning. But I think that can be a pretty powerful thing. Because if you... I mean, you know, to answer your question in a long way, if you come up in a situation where you're around people who are just doing what they do, then there's a very good chance that you're going to follow that pattern too.
His path was a lot like mine. When I was in elementary school, I was in a class with all black kids. Then things changed, sixth grade at University Prep. I remember playing baseball and feeling super uncomfortable being the only black kid on the team. Kind of like Walter's experience playing tennis.
And I remember, my dad and I still laugh about this, and it's been a long time, but the first time I went to the Mercer Island Racquet Club and played in a tournament, and people were coming up and asking my dad about me like they were at a zoo exhibit. I mean, it was like, people would look so curious as they were looking, because I could see him talking to my dad, and there's glass there, but I could see him kind of looking at me like I was on display, and like, how did he end up playing tennis? Like, we're not allowed to play tennis? Or, well, huh, so how did he, does he play basketball too? And
it's not always about race. Everyone has been in an uncomfortable position at some point, like some of my friends at school.
Where have you felt like out of place?
Next to a girl.
When's a time have you've ever felt like really weird or uncomfortable?
Right now.
No, it's not. It's a tape recorder.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you guys.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
When have you felt completely out of place or like uncomfortable in a situation?
First time I smoke weed.
Even though those were some funny situations, my friend Roberto told me about how he feels awkward being the only private school kid with his family friends.
He's a junior, and he said, "Oh, the book, The Giver. This is a hard book." We're reading in class, in English class, I remember that, wow, at my school, we read The Giver in seventh grade.
I can understand how Roberto feels. We all have different situations when we feel weird, odd, or uncomfortable. But these same situations can lead to so many different opportunities.
I mean, a kid who doesn't want to walk 4 blocks down the street into downtown because only white people go there. Or I had a couple of friends who were in sales who worked downtown, and I wanted to take kids in to sit and talk with them, to have that experience of sitting and talking with them. And one of the kids I remember saying saying to me, well, what are you trying to get, you know, get me to have a business job or something downtown? And I said, no, I just, you know, it's good to branch out and try to get different experiences. And you have just as much a right to go down there as anybody else. And he said, they don't even let black people wear suits and work downtown. And I thought, man, that's a 16-year-old kid saying that, who has lived in this town all of his life, and he really legitimately thought that they don't let black people wear suits and work downtown.
Everyone has different stories that they share, and these stories have different resolutions. To achieve what you truly want in life, you have to be pushed in situations you don't want to be in. This is a story of different people in my life doing the exact same thing, pushing boundaries and creating opportunity. For me, I'm going to college next year, and I don't know what's in my distant future. There were plenty of times when I wanted to quit at UPrep and go to the school 5 minutes away from my house. But the only thing I do know is, my life is defined by situations I've been in and the opportunities I've created for myself. That came from working to be different from others and striving to be the odd one out. For Radioactive, this is Jalen Wheeler.
Yeah, what Jalen's going through isn't anything new. I remember performing a poem I wrote criticizing Macklemore for his same love song.
How so?
I was performing this poem at Bumbershoot in front of a mostly white audience, and nobody even snapped or clapped like they had for other poems. It was so awkward.
I wonder what their first impression of you was.
Probably wasn't good.
Our friend Nia Price Nascimento here at Radioactive asked a bunch of people in the area what they think people think when they first meet them.
Let's take a look-see.
So what do you think your first impression is on people?
They mostly pay attention to my accent, hair color, freckles. They don't normally listen to what's actually coming out of my mouth until like second or third sentence.
Well, I would probably say that they think, look at that short hooligan over there. But I really don't know, because it probably varies depending on what the who the person is. If they're elderly, maybe that kid is really, you know, respectable, nice young man holding the door open. Or maybe they'll think, I bet that hooligan is up to no good.
I think it depends on the person. I definitely don't think about other people's first impressions when I'm talking to them. So I think it really is up to whoever you're meeting and how you want them to think about you.
People's first impressions of me are that I'm some kind of mixed race, but they don't really know what I am, and unless they're part Asian and white like me, most of the time they guess I'm something completely wrong, which is kind of interesting to hear, because I like understanding how people judge me by my looks and kind of categorize me as things that I'm completely not, but it's fun to see what people think of my race.
More often than not, it feels like I come off relatively confident, because I've had enough acting training that displaying... I think about first impressions a lot, because I know how important they are, and I try to be as confident as I can when I'm meeting new people, so it seems like that comes off to them. But there's also, like, people seem to think that I'm... forcing other emotions. Like, they believe the confidence, but I'm happy a fair amount of the time when I meet new people, and they seem to think that that's fake. So, I guess confident but ingenuine.
Well, I'm a really awkward person, and I think people find that awkward but interesting about me, so yeah.
I talk weirdly. I'm a little white girl.
Mainly a chill, organized person. Friendly.
For me, I kind of just, like, try and be most outgoing when I'm with people, because I like to try and have good first impressions. But, I mean, they might just think that this is, like, a really weird girl, but they somehow that, like, attracts people, and they just kind of like it, so... Yeah, I may come off as weird, but I just try and show myself.
That I'm kind of quiet and shy. Because typically I'm, like, really quiet around people I first meet. Well, it depends. On a good day, they would probably think that I'm a crazy Asian chick. That's very Asian for some reason. It's the Asian vibe I send off, I guess. On a bad day, people probably would think that I'm like the lazy schoolgirl that just doesn't really want to talk to anybody.
Usually people say like their first impressions of me are that I'm really shy and that I'm really nerdy because I also wear glasses, so.
I think the first thing that they see is my purple hair, and they probably think that's kind of weird. And yeah, and the way I act, it really depends on how I'm acting at the time. Like if I'm with a friend, they're gonna think like, wow, really. But if I'm alone, they'll probably think I'm really quiet and whatnot.
Yeah, I feel like when people meet me, they either think I'm super goofy or just flat out unmotivated to do anything.
And when people meet me, sometimes they usually think I'm really young for my age. I swear, if I get asked one more time at work, if I'm able to work there.
That isn't the case for everyone. Some people have reputations for having a perfect life when that's not a reality.
What you're about to hear may be hard for some of you to listen to, but it's important.
Here's a story on a girl many thought had it all together, but was actually going through a lot.
As a child, Ivy Jacobson spent a lot of time with her father.
He taught her how to cook, clean, ski, snowboard, and play her favorite sport, basketball. All the things any loving parent would teach their child to do.
However, all of this togetherness masks a secret, which haunted Ivy for years, and now she's not keeping it a secret anymore.
Radioactive's Noelle Gaska has more.
The first time I saw Ivy Jacobson walking through the halls of our high school, I was immediately struck by how confident she was. A senior, tall, blonde, popular, and a varsity athlete, I immediately labeled her as the perfect girl next door. But Ivy says there was a time where she wasn't so confident.
I was very insecure. I had many friends, but I was still really shy and wasn't like comfortable with who I was, like body-wise.
During middle school, Ivy's classmates picked on her. One of her former teachers, Larry Palmer, remembers how different she was from other kids her age.
She was a little bit more naive than other kids. You got the impression that she'd had a very sheltered life.
Ivy's father sheltered her. Ivy was only allowed to have certain numbers on her cell phone, she couldn't have an email account, and she couldn't use the internet. Her wardrobe was even dictated by her father.
I wouldn't be allowed to wear tight jeans or anything tight or girly. Like, I was always wearing basketball, sports stuff, and if I tried to, like, dress up, because, like, I had to dress up for my basketball games, when we went to the store for it, my dad would have to be with, and I'd have to try on every article of clothing and get his approval with, and it was just horrid, because I couldn't ever wear what I wanted to wear.
But Ivy acted like everything was normal.
I was role-playing. I was hiding, you know, hiding behind a story and hiding behind, you know, what my dad was doing to me.
What Ivy's father was doing was sexually abusing her from the time she was in the sixth grade. It went on for 5 years until she told her best friend Maddie during her sophomore year.
And I said, Maddie, there's things I haven't told you. She's like, well, what do you mean? And I just like, Maddie, I don't know how to say it. She's like, has he touched you? And I just said, yes, like, he's been touching me.
The abuse affected every part of Ivy's life, including the thing she loved most, the thing that bonded her and her father the most. Basketball.
In order for me to get like new running shoes or new basketball shoes, like I'd have to do certain things for him sexually.
In an email written to me, Ivy's mother, Jennifer Jacobson, writes that she didn't know her daughter was being sexually abused. Her ex-husband made sure to keep Ivy away from her mother in fear that Ivy would tell her. Ivy says that they couldn't even do things like grocery shopping together. Ivy was terrified that coming forward would tear her family apart, but she knew she was doing the right thing. A few days after that conversation with her friend, Ivy's dad was arrested. Ivy's story is rare. 86% of sexually abused children in Washington state don't come forward. Ivy went on to do something unimaginable, yet necessary for her freedom, testify against her father in court.
Seeing him in trial, I literally felt naked on the stand.
Ivy would have to get used to that feeling of intense vulnerability. She would have to testify 2 more times over the next 18 months during her sophomore and junior year. Finally, in July of 2013, after 3 separate trials, Ivy's father was convicted of rape and child molestation. He's currently serving his 16-year sentence in prison. After the last trial, Ivy's process of rebuilding her life began.
My main thing was to get my body back. I realized, wow, I can go shopping and I can wear what I want to wear. Like, I can be Mia. And then just junior and senior year, it was totally me becoming Ivy.
Ivy started to become the graceful and confident woman I saw in the hallway. Soon, Ivy saw herself getting ready to graduate from Lake Stevens High School. Out of 500 students in her graduating class, Ivy was selected as one of the speakers for graduation. She had already told her close friends about her past, but there are going to be 6,000 people there. She originally decided to play it safe.
So I started writing, and I'm like, everyone's going to talk about like pursuing dreams and achieving, and you know, and that's the ordinary. So I literally like threw away what I'd written, because I'm like, this isn't what I'm supposed to write.
Finally, the big day came.
I was really nervous. Nervous because I was just about to tell 6,000 people what happened to me. And then when I started like talking about this girl I knew.
There was this girl. She was manipulated at a young age. She could only wear certain things to school and could only talk to particular people. She was socially and culturally inept. Also, behind the scenes, her father had started to rape her when she was in the sixth grade. She did not know that what he was doing was wrong. Last summer, July 15th, her father was finally put into prison. Where is this girl now? She is standing before all of you. I am that girl.
Today, Ivy is working three jobs. She's taking online classes through Everett Community College. She's moved into a place of her own. She's writing a book about her experience, too. She's making her own decisions based on what she wants. Ivy's mom says that if her daughter hadn't come forward, they'd still be in the same awful situation today. After going through so much trauma, she sees her daughter as a hero, saying, quote, "She's an inspiration to many, but she's truly my hero." Ivy isn't the girl next door. She's the hero next door. For Radioactive, I'm Noel Gasca.
Hey, Ardo, I just wanted to say I appreciate you a lot.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate you too, Carlos.
And we appreciate you too, listeners. Thanks for checking out this month's podcast. Please make sure to like the Radioactive Facebook page.
It goes a little something like this. Facebook.com/radioactive youth media.
Thank you to Jenny Asarno and Lila Kataya for running Radioactive with love and compassion. Thank you to Azeb Tuji, Jalen Wheeler, Nia Price-Nascimento, and Noel Gasca for their stories this month.
And all the people here at Radioactive who made this month's podcast possible. Until next time.
P.O.P. Hold it down.